Right there, so that's good. All right, how's everybody doing? This is the Mid-Range Podcast. I'm here with Bryce Buchanan. Bryce, it's great to have you here. Why don't you tell me a little about yourself before we start and introduce your brand and tell me what's going on.
Yeah, so I'm a UTK grad, University of Tennessee. I grew up probably an hour and a half from the campus. You know, from where I'm from, it's ball or nothing, you know, in all sports. But mainly for me, it's college basketball. I've always had a passion for college basketball. Can kind of tell you when it started. It was back in, it's either 2006, 2007. Tennessee fans will know Chris Lofton hit a big time three over Kevin Durant and, funny enough, Rick Barnes coached Texas. And ever since that second, I was probably six or seven rows up, saw it live. I have just fell in love with the sport of basketball and mainly college basketball. I remember after the game, I went up to KD. I got his autograph on our tickets. Still have those to this day.
That's cool.
And yeah, that made me fall in love with it, and you know, just continued watching throughout the years. I remember when, you know, number one Memphis and number two Tennessee, and Bruce Pearl went into Memphis and beat them. I'm, you know, a 9 year old. I'm crying out of excitement. It's college basketball has meant a lot to me growing up, and yeah. So with this, I've started a little something called College Court Talk on, you know, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, you know, all the socials, and you know, kind of like you, it's a passion project for me. Something that I just love to do. I watch enough college basketball to, you know, I consume enough throughout the year. It's like, why not just talk a little bit about it? You know, there's going to be a lot of things that a lot more people know than me, but you know, maybe some people enjoy what I do. Maybe I'll say some things that are right, and you know, maybe I'll say some things that people will come back to and they're like, yeah, that didn't end up being right. But that's the fun in it, right? Who's ever had a perfect preseason projection? So but yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. It's like, on one hand, you want to be right on as much stuff as possible, but the dumb shit is actually probably what is going to draw more attention in the long run.
That's what gets clicks, it seems like. Out of some of the stuff that I've posted over the last few weeks, it's the stuff that, especially like the top five, I'm posting like top five lists at each position. And those are getting traction just from putting names on there that I think people – I won't say necessarily wouldn't have on there, but it's people that I have full trust in that I think is going to shine this year. And I don't think some people necessarily see it that way, but hey, I'll go to it and go into the season saying, you know, those are my guys. So,
yeah. Fletcher Lawyer, not a top five, not a top five.
No, sorry, Purdue fans. I cannot get behind the Fletcher. No, don't get me wrong. Fletcher Lawyer is a good basketball player.
Of course.
He's not a top five shooting guard in the country. I'm sorry. I can't go that far. It's just not going to happen. And, oh, they're going to come say, oh, well, Purdue beat you when you had your best team with Dalton Connect. No, it's not that. I like Purdue. I think they have a good team this year. I'm not buying Fletcher Lawyer right now. Sorry.
I'm with you, and I despise Purdue as much as I dislike any team in college
basketball. I can understand. I mean, the Big Ten fandom, I'm sure not a lot of people like.
Yeah, sure. It is funny because it's like Michigan State, really, in the grand scheme of the Big Ten for the last 20 years, has kind of been the top dog to some extent. But like, Tom Izzo is a hard guy to hate, like, because you know he's likable, and it's like Michigan State will have these rosters that aren't necessarily like talent top tier, but like. They win and they play and they're, you know, they're a good watch. Purdue is always like just like the perennial like choke artist, like, and like you had to watch Zach Edey for 2 years, which was like torture.
Like, don't get me started on that. That's a tough subject. I like to call him around these parts the foul merchant, but that's another conversation.
Yeah. Well, Edey was hilarious. I mean, every post up was an elbow into someone's head that went uncalled. Oh, yeah. Which is always hilarious. Yeah,
and then there's people complaining about how people are fouling him. I'm like, well, they probably are, but he's also throwing, you know, elbows at people to get the space that he's creating. So,
yeah, totally.
But yeah, I was happy to see him leave. I was happy to see him
leave. Yeah, so was I. And it cracked me up when it's like first preseason game last year. I think he had like nine fouls in the first game.
Yeah.
But beside the point. So Tennessee guy, but Tennessee basketball guy, even from like mid-2000s, you're saying, is that... Yeah. That can't be particularly common in that area, right? It's got to be mostly football.
Well,
first and
foremost. I mean, and I'm not saying I'm not a football guy or baseball guy. Unfortunately, we lost our head skipper today in baseball. Yeah, it's been a very dark day
to my San Francisco Giants. Yeah.
Oh God, I didn't know that before I hopped on here. No, but he's gonna be awesome. He's got a fan from me. I'm gonna be a Giants guy now. I'm not an MLB guy, but I'll watch the Giants just because he's there. But no, I like all sports, but I think basketball, it's just different for me. I wouldn't say that's very common here in East Tennessee. Yeah. It's pretty heavy football, but I think over the past, I guess, 10 years Barnes has been here, maybe since the, you know, first or second year Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield's been here. You know, basketball's definitely taken a step up. And obviously we were, you know, when Bruce Pearl was here with Lofton and Juwan Smith and all those guys, it was also, you know, popular then. But I think over the past, I would say 5 or 6 years, Tennessee basketball has really taken the jump in popularity.
Yeah, Tennessee basketball, obviously, like, they are one of the top, let's say, 10 teams in the country, almost coming to the end of every year, always a top 3-4 seed minimally. Mm-hmm. As we both know, and I don't mean to bring up something that's going to hurt to talk about, but they have yet to go to a Final Four, right?
They have.
And
they have.
Correct. Is that something you see changing this year? Or where are you at with Tennessee basketball?
So here's my thing. And every year I'm going to go into it as a fan saying, absolutely, this is the year that it happens. I think personally, and maybe people say this every year about their team specifically, that this is the best roster that Barnes has built since he's been here. If you look at it, just, you know, mapping it out, you got, in my opinion, the best point guard in the SEC in Jacoby Gillespie. And no, that's not just because he's from my hometown and I went to high school with him. He is the best point guard in the SEC. Actually, I was a senior. He was a freshman. I was the point guard. He was arguably better than me at that point. I remember moments on running our plays and stuff. He was on scout team, which why was he on scout team? I'll never know. and he's just making us look silly out there. And I'm like, he's going to be a star. I thought, you know, coming out of high school, he went to Belmont. I knew he was going to show out there. And then obviously he went to Maryland with, you know, Kevin Willard there. And, you know, luckily for Tennessee fans and people from the East Tennessee area, Willard decided to take the Nova job. And I think after that and after he left, it was, you know, pretty obvious where Jacoby was going to go. But that's beside the point. I think he's the best point guard in the SEC. If you just look at it from, you know, a statistical standpoint, I mean, he averaged, I think, 14-5 last year while shooting 40% from three. That's efficient. And I think, you know, in Barnes' system last year, I think he didn't have as much of the keys to the offense in Willard's system, but in Barnes' system, even when he was recruiting him, he told him, hey, you got the keys this year. It's going to be your team. And I think he's going to take that and run with it. And then you pair him with the top five, you know, player in last year's class and Nate Amint. And you're thinking this team could be special. I mean, Nate Amint's a, you know, arguably a top five pick, definitely top 10 pick, you know, granted, you know, he does what he's supposed to do. And in next year's draft, it's hard to see those two not on all SEC list. And it's hard to see Jacoby not in the player of the year talk in the SEC and potentially even, you know, in the country. But you bring back most of your front court and Felix Okpora, you know, Cade Phillips. People don't even know about JP Estrella yet. He's a guy that has not stayed healthy throughout his career. Freshman year he did, but, you know, he's a freshman, you know, sitting behind some dudes that we had before. And last year he had a, you know, a foot injury to start the year and had to sit out all year. And, you know, this year it seems, you know, through some people that I've, you know, talked with and articles that I've read that he's been phenomenal in practice. He was, you know, pretty good in the secret scrimmage that he had with Ohio State. Yeah. And, I think a lot of people are going to be shocked by how good JP Estrella is this year. And then you and look at
well
last
against
year's
Ohio
team,
State. He could do well against anybody because that's an elite.
Be,
that's an elite
he must
roster.
Be player of
yeah.
the year, right? He must
yeah,
be player
definitely.
Of the year.
It must be like, yeah, he'll probably be competing for sure.
Continue, yeah, you look at last year's team and what I see that Barnes did different from this year's team to last year's team. And I think a big issue from last year's team was the depth piece. Night in and night out, we were playing seven guys. And I think for a team that can take a next step and get to the Final Four, you're going to pick your rotation. But there's a night where you get in foul troubles. There's a night where guys don't have it. And I feel like last year we went into sequences where we didn't have the depth that we've had in the past. And I remember one game, it was against Florida actually at home, and we ended up winning that game by 20, which was, I think, a shock to the country.
Yeah, I remember that.
Where we had six or seven scholarship guys playing that day. I know Zakai was out, Igor was out, and we ended up winning. And that I think that shows that we didn't have the depth that we needed last year to make a Final Four. I mean, I know we made an Elite Eight, but as we saw against Houston, we weren't as good as Houston last year.
Yeah.
And I think with this year's team, you see more depth. And, you know, if it's Amari Abram from Louisiana Tech, or if it's Ethan Bird from overseas, if it's, you know, Jalen Carey from Vanderbilt, there's depth on this team. You know, obviously with Rick Barnes, you got to play hard to play. You're going to play defense or you're not going to play. So we'll see if those guys buy into that, and if they, you know, if we truly have a rotation, you know, that's deeper than, you know, seven or eight guys a night. But I think we have the talent to do that.
Yeah, and it's got to be nice for you and for Rick Barnes to not have to pretend like Zakai Ziegler is an elite defender, because that discourse always got tired. Let me ask you something, because I talked about this with Nick on the last podcast, but it was like about a month ago, and there was a day on 24/7. Where Nate Amet got made the number one player in the class, and like Twitter blew up, and like Instagram blew up, and then like 12 hours later, he was right back to four.
Yeah.
What was your reaction when that happened? What was like the Tennessee reaction in that moment?
Well, you're looking at it from a standpoint is Nate Amet's already the best player that we've ever recruited to in the program history. So, you know, he's already the best player that we've ever recruited. So now he's taking that step to the number one player, and you're thinking, oh, we've got a really, really special player. And that doesn't knock that he's not going to be a special player. But, you know, to be the number one player in the country in a class that I think is arguably one of the better classes we've seen in a long time. I mean, just look at, I mean, A.J. Diabonsa, Darren Peterson, you know, Mikel Brown at Louisville. You know, I'm sure I'm missing a ton of guys. Caleb Wilson, UNC. I mean, it's a very, very good class. And to see a guy that is ultimately coming to Tennessee as the number one player for – three or four hours. It was awesome. I mean, all the message boards were talking about it. It was big. And then, you know, 4 hours later, we're claiming that Tennessee doesn't have nice things and the people hate us that do the rankings. I'm like, no, I mean, there's just really good basketball players out there this year. And just because he's not rated number one doesn't mean he's not a good player. So let's not get crazy here.
No, that was just – it's just funny. It's so funny because it's – Nick and I were talking about this last time, but it's just this idea of, like, this completely subjective number shifting, like, months out from the AAU and summer season ending. So it's, like, completely irrelevant to, like, what –
these guys
high school,
are already
they're cruising
college.
Over. Yeah.
Yeah, they're
exactly.
already in college.
Practicing with their college team.
Yeah, I'm a guy that personally I don't think rankings – like, you have your top guys, obviously. And, but I don't think rankings necessarily mean much to me. I mean, look at Zakai Ziegler. I mean, he had a fantastic career at Tennessee. I mean, truthfully, it was amazing. He wasn't even – I don't even know if he was ranked. I mean
– Yeah.
He, and if you look at it, he was, you know, one of the better guards in the SEC year in and year out. So rankings are obviously, they're nice to have, and you want to get every five star you can get, because there's going to be more five stars that hit than miss. But ultimately when they're in college, that ranking goes away. You're a college basketball player and you got to perform. So, the ranking that matters then is how good your team is, and then for most of those guys and where you're going to get drafted and what number that is. So,
For sure. Ziegler's funny. I think a good thing was, or a good story around Ziegler was, I was texting with Nick last year, and like, he's a guy who's plugged into college basketball big time, like watches more than I do. I mean, it sounds like you're a similar level of sicko, but I remember him being like, yeah, like Zakai Ziegler, it's crazy. Like, he does all this at, because what was he, 5'9", 5'10", something like that?
Yeah. And Nick, generous.
Yeah, right. Like, he's 5'8", even. Yeah. And Nick was like, yeah, he was like, he's 5'8". Like, I thought he was like 6 foot. And it's like, the way he played, you didn't even recognize how tiny he was. You just like, because he was a great player. It always just cracks me up that his, like, you know, he gets like 2 steals a game, and that means he's like one of the best defenders in the SEC. And it's like, we can be honest here. Like, you don't have to lie.
The thing is with that, and especially last year, I think personally we had a better defender on our team last year in Jemai Meshack. So, and I get it. You know, Zakai's loved, and he's a good defender. He's a great basketball player. And I'm never going to say he doesn't deserve the defensive player of the year. So, but I think we had a better defender on the basketball team last year, personally.
Yeah, it is just, I mean, it's just a reality when you're that size. It's the same thing with, like, when people talk about, like, Braden Smith being a good defender. And I'm just like,
no,
he's not a good defender. I mean, he is an opportunistic defensive playmaker. And that is a valuable asset when you're a small guard, because it's hard to be a good defender if you're a small guard. But, like, let's not sugarcoat it. Like, let's not bullshit it. Like, everyone knows. If you put, like, a powerful guard on offense and Braden Smith, he's going to go right by him. He's going to finish right through him, no problem, every time. So, speaking of Purdue and speaking of Braden Smith, who do you have coming into the season as the best team in the country, as your number one team going into it?
As a Tennessee fan, it hurts to say this, but I have Florida as the best team in the country.
Really?
What they did in keeping their front court in, you know, Alex Condon and Thomas Hawk and Ruben Chinyelu, and then people forget that Micah Hanlocken is sitting on the bench and ready to come in at any moment because he didn't play last year. They also kept that guy. And then you go and look at it, and Walter Clayton is, I mean, he was arguably at the end of the year and most of the year the best player in college basketball, especially in the, you know, in March Madness. He just took over games. You're looking at replacing Walter Clayton and Will Richards and Elijah Martin. But look who you're replacing him with. You're replacing him with Boogie Flan, who, you know, he was hurt last year, but, you know, from, if you're looking at a statistical standpoint, he was a 14-5 guy each night. And you know, most people are going to take a next step when you're that level of a basketball player. And then you bring in a guy from Princeton, Xavier Lee, who both of them can handle the 1 and 2 position. It doesn't matter who you get the ball to when one of your three front court guys get the rebound, because they are going to get the rebound. They can push the ball and they're going to shoot the ball. You're going to look at a super big lineup with Hawk at the three. I think I'm saying his name right. I know he has a weird pronunciation of his last name, but you're going to look at, I mean, he's 6'9", or, you know, 6'9", 6'8", 6'9", at the three position. And then Alex Condon, 6'10", and then, you know, Ruben Chinyelu, 6'10", 6'11". You got 2 point guards that you can get the ball out to. And in a Todd Golden system, they're pushing the basketball. That's his bread and butter. He's going to push the basketball. And when he's Dutton, he's going to get into a set that he likes, and he's going to get his guys an open shot. So I think they replaced with really good players from the portal. I think he kept guys that he needed to keep to have a really good basketball team this year. I am also in belief, in order to be the best, you have to beat the best. And I think they're the best team in college basketball coming into the year.
That's fair. Todd Golden, you know, great college basketball coach, and even better guy. Right. I mean, we all know.
Right.
On and off the court.
Yeah,
he's a guy who really brings it.
Great guy off the court, from what I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah, it's 100%. No, yeah, Florida's awesome. We did SEC. It came out on Wednesday. We recorded yesterday. But Nick picked Florida. I went with Kentucky to win the SEC. I just thought Owe, Diabate, and Quaintance was enough to say that they were – the best team in the SEC, although I had Houston as my best team in the country. If you're talking a national scale, what sets Florida apart for you from a Houston or from a Purdue on a national scale? And then we'll talk a little more SEC.
Yeah, and kind of just back to my point, I think for Florida, their depth, I think when you look at Todd Golden, I love the way he coaches basketball. He's an analytical guy, and I think the game is turning into a lot of analytics. I love a team that is super, super fast-paced and can shoot the basketball. In today's game, the three-point shot, you pretty much live or die by it, or a lot of teams do at least. And that's what he brought in with the guys from the transfer portal, and that's also what he's instilling in the guys that also came back. You know, he's putting Hawk at the three to spread the floor, and I think he's going to have that ability. But then you look at the power forward position and Alex Condon, who could have left and went to the draft this year and probably been a, you know, late first round, early second round pick, but ultimately decided to come back. He's also going to stretch the floor at Florida. So I think with what they brought back and, you know, the bench pieces that they've also added, and you look at, you know, Klavzar, who didn't get as much playing time, you know, as, you know, last year, but when he did go in, you know, he showed out and, you know, has the ability to do that. And then they bring in AJ Brown and, you know, CJ Ingram from high school and, you know, things like that. It's hard pressed for me to see them not be the first team in the country come into the year. And I know the AP poll doesn't have it as that. I think you could arguably say that Houston or Florida, could be right there, with a Purdue, you know, right behind them, maybe. You know, I think UConn could also be, you know, right there as well. But I would say those four teams are arguably ahead of the rest right now. But it's talking season. So, you know, until it happens, you can't really say anything. But I think that's what stands out to me about Florida is it pains me to say it because, you know, as a Tennessee fan, you don't want to cheer for Florida, but I like Todd Golden as a basketball coach.
Yeah,
I have a Florida buddy that I talked to, you know, and when Todd Golden was at San Francisco, I told him, and I was like, "You're going to love this guy. You're going to love him when he comes and coaches for your team." And I think now he's like, "Yeah, you're right. I really like him." So, that's what stands out to me. I think there's not a wrong pick for that number one spot with those four teams. I think Houston and Florida are probably the top tier of those four, but I think you can go either way with Houston or Florida there.
Yeah. I'm sure your buddy was like a great, great basketball coach. Ran into him at a sorority mixer recently, and he was a super nice guy too. So
yeah,
you know,
yeah, he definitely talks 10, about his personality a lot too.
But, so we got Florida first. You said Houston close behind. And then you said next tier is maybe Purdue, UConn. And then that top four you think sets themselves apart. I guess before we go into SEC, since you do have UConn in there, I will ask. Because I know I picked St. John's to win the Big East. The Big East poll came out. They had St. John's first.
Correct.
What has you feeling UConn above St. John's going into the Big East season?
Well, and I think you're going to see a trend here is I like good basketball coaches. Dan Hurley's a really damn good basketball coach.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody can argue that. I don't care what happened last year, 8 seed, whatever he was. He's a really good basketball coach, and he's a basketball coach that hates losing. And I think he recruited that way out of the portal. And, you know, Silas Demery from Georgia, he keeps, you know, Solo Ball from last year. You get, you know, Terrace Reed Jr. comes back. I think he, you know, Alex Caravan comes back, who we, you know, arguably thought could have went the year before. I don't think he had the season he thought he was going to have last year. But, you know, he's got to be motivated to have a really good year coming into this year. So I think with those four pieces and some of the bench pieces that he has and just who Dan Hurley is as a coach, I think they're going to be really good. And it's hard for me to pick against a Rick Pitino coach team because, you know, it's Rick Pitino. But I think with them, it's gonna take some time to adjust to for one, getting coached by Rick Pitino, for as much as he brought in from the portal, and you know, just adjusting to that league and you know, playing teams of that, you know, caliber every night. So I think you could throw St. John's. I'm personally not as high on them as others. Just right now, I think they could end up being a you know, the best team in the country. But
yeah,
just coming into the year, I think they gotta, you know, chemistry has to happen, and you know, Rick Pitino's a hard nosed coach, and he's gonna play guys that play hard, you know, for him. So, but yeah, I like UConn in the Big East, but that's no knock on St. John's.
No, that's fair. Yeah, at first when you were like, "I like good coaches," I was like, "Oh, is this a Rick Pitino diss here?" Like,
no, absolutely. Pitino, not.
I was like, "Yeah."
No, I don't think you can. If anybody says Rick Pitino is not a good coach, I don't think they should be talking college basketball. So,
yeah, I completely agree. I said when we did Big East stuff, I in my opinion, he's the greatest coach of all time, college coach of all time.
Yeah.
Like the thing, because like it's the quality. The success with the quality of teams that he's had, it's like, you know, you can put Coach K there if you want to just be like, yeah, okay, it's Coach K, he won the most. But it's like, it's fucking
I'm not a
good.
Coach K guy, personally.
Yeah. No, me either.
But the thing with Rick Pitino is he's went to, what is it, four different schools, to five? It could be more than that, but, you know, four off the top of my head, in Kentucky, Louisville, Iona, St. John's now. They've all been good. They've never been bad. It's like I don't know how old he is, but you know, he's getting to the end of his career, and he's not slowing down. I mean, he had St. John's last year looking, you know, just fine. And I know what would they lose to Arkansas in the
second round,
round of 32.
Yeah.
But you know, that's the March Madness. That's the March Madness.
Yeah.
But, he's been good everywhere he's went. He's a, like you said, he's arguably one of the best coaches of all time. I'm personally on the Roy Williams train when it comes to the best coach of all time. But
that's fair.
That's just my opinion. But no, Rick Pitino's is right there.
Yeah, Pitino. And I will say with St. John's this year, while we're on the topic, I think they, as you said, like they replaced a lot. It's going to take time for it to get firing on all cylinders. But what I will say about this year's St. John's team that really sets them apart from last year is last year was a tremendous defense with tremendous hustle that ran. This team is going to have legit offensive firepower.
Yes.
And is going to be able to like score the ball in the half court, get out
Correct.
And run. And they still have strong defenders all over the court. They did not get any worse from last year. If anything, they got better. It's just that UConn also got better. So they are like putting themselves both probably in a top five conversation. What the bummer is about the Big East is after them, it's Creighton is like, you know, eight seed type team. And then it's like kind of a pit down there, which is too bad for that conference, but a thing you can do. All right. So Florida, best team in the country. If we go back to the SEC, who do you see as challenging Florida for an SEC championship come March?
Yeah, and I think with the SEC, I don't know if it's going to be as strong as last year with 14 teams in the tournament. But I think that your top six teams could all arguably be in the running to win it. I think Florida is the clear headed favorite. I think you have, you know, Tennessee right there with them. You have, you know, John Calipari's Arkansas team right there with them. You have, you know, Mark Pope in Kentucky right there with them. Alabama is right there. You know, I'm a believer in exhibition games don't mean much, but I actually learned a ton from their exhibition game against Florida State. LeBaron Filon is an NBA player playing college basketball this year. He is a stud, and I am so excited to see him play basketball this year. And then you pair that with Aiden Holloway in the backcourt, and you're looking at a, you know, top three backcourt in the SEC, potentially, you know, top three backcourt in the country. But I think those teams, I think Auburn, they're a wait and see team with me. Obviously losing Bruce Pearl, Hall of Fame basketball coach, and then, you know, handing it over to Stephen Pearl. Obviously it was a perfect time. None of your players are going to leave, and you bring back Todd Pettiford. You get a lot from the portal, and you bring in who I think is going to be a star, and his name's blanking me right now, and I could have told you that. Elijah Freeman from LMU,
yeah,
D2 LMU. I think he is going to be a star for Auburn this year. Then you bring in UCF's Keyshawn Hall and you know, Kevin Overton, things like that. I think it's going to take them some time to click. I think, as we saw from, you know, the exhibition game that they did play against Oklahoma State, but I think they're going to be right there in the top tier of the SEC. I think those are your six teams that have potential of winning it. I think there's, I wouldn't say a significant drop off after those top teams, but I think you're going to see a little bit of a trend down after that. But I think any of those six teams is going to have as good a shot as anybody.
So if we stay in the SEC, Nick and I both kind of question how Auburn's going to perform this year, as maybe like they don't quite have the talent they've had in the past, and you lose Bruce Pearl and you replace him with his son, who's obviously completely unproven coach.
Yeah.
Like literally zero experience as a head coach, which is pretty nuts.
I didn't understand. So my thought process when it all happened was, obviously I knew Stephen Pearl was going to be the next head coach at Auburn. That's been known for, I think, a little bit now. I figured it was going to be more of like a, you know, 1 to 2 year little trial run. If it goes well, it goes well. If it doesn't, we'll move on. Well, they gave him a 5-year deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously those guys know a lot more than me, but that's a pretty large deal and a long-term deal to bring to a guy that's never coached college basketball, and you're bringing them to crazy. A team that just came off a Final Four run. I don't know. It's a wait and see game with me. Maybe I don't put Auburn up there just yet, but I think they had the talent to do it. But you know, in the video I had of breaking down them, they did lose a ton. I mean, you lose the best player in college basketball in Johnny Broome. It's, you know, that's tough to overcome.
Yeah, it's a little like, it's a little messed up what Bruce did to his own son. It's kind of like, it was a little like Harbaugh-y, where it's like you leave right whenever everything's hitting the fan. It's like, all right, I'm going to get out of here while everyone still loves me, and then you're fucked. Like, it's going bad for you.
I was a little confused on it. I don't know if it's he was just ready to be done with it, but I feel like a lot of coaches, when they're ready to be done with it, it's, you know, recruiting. I know it's the NIL piece of it. I know that's take a lot of our great coaches out of college basketball. But when he did it, you already have your team built. There's no more negotiation with NIL. They can't go anywhere. There's no transfer portal window unless you leave. So now you just get to coach, which is why you do it. So it was a little obscure to me to see him leave that late. Maybe it's a sign that he thinks this team might not be as good as years past, and he wants to leave on a high note and go into the Final Four. That's just me speculating. But I think Stephen Pearl's walking into a fan base that's having a win now mentality. I don't think he's going to get an asterisk next to this year. Oh, because he left late. I think, you know, let's win now. We have the roster to do it. So it could be a wait and see game with Auburn.
And it's going to be tough when, you know, his dad's running for Senate right down the street and you gotta deal with that at the same time. When you go down the list in the SEC, I think it kind of gets to that, let's say that third tier outside of contenders. And then you got that next group, top 25 type teams. And then you get down to, like, say the Vanderbilts and the Missouris. Mm-hmm. I feel, and my co-host felt as well when we talked to SEC, that Vanderbilt was kind of one of these sneaky teams that could be really, really good this year. Mm-hmm. Where are you at? What's a sleeper team for you in the SEC that you think could kind of come out of nowhere?
Yeah, so I think, and this kind of goes back to the coaching, I am a big fan of Bucky Ball at Texas A&M. He was on my short list for if Rick Barnes decided to hang it up to be our next head coach at Tennessee. I love his style of play, the fast-paced press, five in, five out. I love that style of play. I'm a fast-paced guy. Let's get the quickest shot, more possession, turnovers, let's go. I think he could have a really, you know, sneaky good year this year in the SEC. Another team, and why are we not giving enough love to Ole Miss? Like,
Yeah.
What have they not done? Yeah. Well, what have they not done in the SEC? And you know, I know Chris Beard, one of those, you know, great basketball coach, maybe not so great guy. I get it. But from a basketball coaching standpoint, Chris Beard's
100%.
He's an elite basketball coach. They bring back, you know, Malik Dia. They bring AJ Storr. You know, he didn't have a great year at Kansas last year. But if you look at him at Wisconsin, he's a star. So if Chris Beard can get the Wisconsin AJ Storr this year at Ole Miss, why can't Ole Miss be good? You know, you bring in Travis Perry from Kentucky, who can shoot the basketball. I don't think Ole Miss gets enough national love from a lot of people. And I think last year, I don't think they were in that top tier of the SEC necessarily, but you know, they could beat any team on any given night. I remember it was a late February night, and we went into Oxford, and ultimately we lost the basketball game. Chris Beard's an elite coach. I don't think he gets enough love, and I think Ole Miss could be really good this year.
Yeah, that's totally fair. So Ole Miss and A&M, you've got as sleeper teams. Let's go to the other side of it. We kind of talked about Auburn, so give me another team in the realm of overrated. Like, who's a team that you think's maybe getting a little too much hype coming into the season that won't live up to it?
Yeah, and I think the reason I'm saying this is because I think they're a little bit overhyped. I don't think they're not good. I think Kentucky might be coming into the year just a little bit too overhyped. Not to say that they don't have good players, not to say that they don't have stars, but Mark Pope's system is it's a system that you have to recruit guys to play your system. It's a shooting system. It's a lot of threes, and it's guys that have to make those threes. And right now they have the preseason, you know, best player in the conference in Otega Oweh. And I'm not taking anything away from that. But I wouldn't sit here and say that he's like some sharpshooter that's going to hit 40% from three this year. I know they got, you know, Jalen Lowe from Pitt, but he's not a guy that I'm going to sit here and say he's going to shoot, you know, 39, 40% from three this year. Yeah. You know, Denzel Aberdeen from Florida, he can shoot the ball, yes, but I see him more of as a downhill drive type of guy. And, you know, Muhammad Diabate, how much did he shoot when he was at Alabama? And then you bring in JQ from Arizona State, and you know, he's not even healthy yet. So and with an ACL tear, it's not something that is just going to magically, he's not just going to come in and hit the ground running and you know, be ready to go as soon as he gets there. It's, you know, it's going to take time, and I think it's going to take time for this team to gel. It's a lot of different pieces on the team. I mean, how many players did they bring back from last year's team? I know Oweh was there, Colin Chandler was there, Brandon Garrison was there, Trent Noah was there, but a lot of different, you know, moving pieces, a lot of young guys, Jasper Johnson, sure. Cam Williams, things like that. So,
and it's an expensive roster.
I think, yeah, that's kind of where this comes from is, you know, the numbers that's floating around is $22 million for this roster. If you look at it on paper, Are we saying this is a $22 million roster?
Yeah.
I mean,
I think that's
I
fair.
I don't know. Like, that's kind of where my argument comes. I don't think that right now that, and I think they're AP, what, eighth in the AP or something like that?
Yeah, eighth or ninth, yeah.
Eighth or ninth. I'm just not there with them yet. I think they're a top 15 team, and I'm just not ready to crown them as a top 10 team yet. This take we could come back to this take at the end of the year and I could be getting flamed, but I'm going to wait and see. I think Mark Pope's a really good coach, but I think he also has to recruit his system. And I think last year he did a really good job of doing that. I got to see it this year. I got to see people be able to, you know, hit from beyond the arc. And, until I do, I'm not going to crown them as champs or anything like that. So, yeah, I think they're a bit overrated. And again, that's not saying they're a bad team.
No, yeah, I think that's fair. And I think it's a good point that maybe I hadn't considered until you mentioned it, but it is fair to say that Oweh and Lowe have actually not necessarily shown that they're incredibly efficient three-point shooters in general. So to expect them to magically be that under Pope's system is maybe a little more projection than people are letting on. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying, yeah. like JQ, even if he is healthy, which reports are that he is, which is insane because he tore his ACL six months ago or something.
I hope he comes and he's ready to go, you know, opening tip. I don't know how likely that is, but I've seen it. I've seen it with Zakai when he tore his ACL his sophomore year, and then he came in his senior year and didn't miss a, or his junior year and didn't miss a game. He wasn't the same Zakai he was his sophomore year till about, you know, midway to the 3/4 of the way through the season. It takes time with those injuries. You know, you gotta get a feel of the game again. You gotta be comfortable putting, you know, yourself out there to make plays. You know, you just tore your ACL. You don't want, you know, something like that to happen again. So, that's kind of where I'm at with that. It's just a wait and see with them.
I think once they get into SEC play, they should be at the peak of their powers, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And if that's the time where they can find their form. I kind of think the same thing with St. John's too, because it's two like pretty new rosters. And like you said, like coaches that like really want to like get you to do their thing. So yep. like, but come conference play for these teams, if they start ripping off wins, don't be surprised. What I will say for Kentucky, I'm looking at it here right now, but they go Louisville on November 11th. Louisville is unreal. I mean, that's they're so good. We can talk about that next. Yeah. Michigan State on November 18th, who's a top 20 team in the country as it stands. UNC, who's top 25 on December 2nd. And then you go Gonzaga, Indiana, and then you go St. John's right before conference play starts. So it's a tough non-con for Kentucky. And then, like we said, like a Kentucky team that kind of needs to learn how to play together. Now, I still think they're the best team in the conference. I think that Mark Pope, I have a lot of faith in Mark Pope after what he did last year. I think mm-hmm. you're right. I think when you say like he had guys fit in his system and he knew how to find those guys, I almost think he made those guys fit his system. Like he had those guys. He could have made anyone fit his system because I think he's a really, really, really top head coach. And with the backing that they have, I think they're going to be really good this year. But I agree with you also that it's a little more unpredictable than maybe people are letting on. I want to talk about a team that maybe is one of the more polarizing teams when it comes to SEC, and a team that I think is being a little bit overhyped and has former Kentucky head coach John Calipari, and that's Arkansas mm-hmm. and the Razorbacks this year. They are coming in the season with a lot of hype. And I know they are being picked to finish, I think, upwards of top three, top four in the conference by a lot mm-hmm. of the smart people who know what the hell they're talking about. Yeah. It seems to me like a extremely unpredictable season, and that I might not have the same faith in Coach Cal as when he has expectations, as we've seen in the past. But what do you think about Arkansas this year? Where do you sit with them?
Yeah, and I think, you know, Arkansas, he brought a lot of good players in. He also kept a lot of good players. I think, you know, he kept DJ Wagner, he kept Carter Knox, you know, Trevon Brazil, Billy Richmond. I think that's big for Coach Cal in his second year at Arkansas. He also recruited really well. He's got, you know, Darius Acuff, you know, Malik Thomas, Nick Pringle, you know, Malik Ewan, or Ewan, however you say his name. I think they're going to be, you know, really solid. I think with Calipari and the way things ended at Kentucky and then the way he started last year at Arkansas, obviously he finished strong. It's one of those things is can he build off the momentum that he had from last season's, you know, run in March Madness? You know, he lost some key players from last year's team. But I think he replaced them with some really good players, you know, coming into this year. But how quick do those freshmen gel? We've always known John Calipari loves young basketball players. He loves to bring in elite freshman classes. And at Kentucky, for the most part, you know, maybe at the end of his tenure, it didn't necessarily work as, you know, as well as it did at the beginning. So we'll see if it works this year. I think John Calipari is a really, really good basketball coach. I also think John Calipari is a little bit of an overhyped basketball coach, and that might be a hot take to a lot of people.
Yeah.
But if you look at some of the rosters he's had at Kentucky, tell me how you only have one national championship at that school. It doesn't make much sense to me when you look at it. But I think with, you know, even the roster he had last year at Arkansas, that was a really, really good team. I mean, you know, you have, you know, Boogie Fland. You still have DJ Wagner. You bring in freshman Carter Knox. You have Trevon Brazil. You have the dude from FAU and Jarnell Davis or whatever his name was. And, you know, you have Ball for Life, Jonas Adu. You get those guys, but it didn't click, and it didn't click till the end of the year. And I think, obviously, what happens in March is ultimately what matters. You know, as a Tennessee fan, I know that, but unfortunately, so
An Ohio State fan, I just hope to be there one day.
But it's so hard, and that's why I'm so ready to just tip the ball and see what these teams can do. They could be another team that could be a little bit overrated, or they could be a team that's sitting right there. I know if you look at it from a KenPom standpoint, he is not a fan of the Arkansas Razorbacks this year. He has them at 29th right now with, 29th offense, 25th defense and efficiency. Maybe he knows something that we don't.
Yeah, I think he's OSU over them, actually, which is nuts. KenPom loves Ohio State more, like, every year. I think it's like just because of Thornton, but like, dude, we were a top 20 KenPom team. We were like when we were 17 and 15 last year, which is just nuts. But
that's the way the analytics go, though. It's crazy.
Yeah, totally. It's purely like. Ohio State is nuts, but not to turn it into an Ohio State conversation, but, you know, Calipari is one of those guys. It's like, yeah, you're expecting him to win national championships, but you're massively underrating how many first round picks he's had. And we all know that's what really matters in college basketball, right?
He's a great recruiter, a fantastic recruiter. He could get any kid he wants. Maybe not so much now that we're in the NIL era, but before then, he could get any kid he wanted. To not have multiple national championships with rosters that good, it doesn't make sense to me. It'll never add up, and that's why I don't think you can ever put John Calipari's name with the greats like Rick Pitino, with Roy Williams, with Coach K, and you know, coaches like that. I just don't think he's there yet, and I think he's also one of those coaches that, you know, I don't know how much longer he's going to do it. But I don't think he's at that tier yet. But I think a lot of people believe he is. I'm just not there with him. So
I agree. We like to joke here at the mid-range that he's impacted young men's lives more than anybody, and that's really the more important thing, isn't it?
I guess that might be his motto, because that's that's all I got right now.
You know, did you see him? He was like in an interview recently. I think it must have been maybe SEC Media Day. But he was like, he feels like college basketball is getting too transactional, and that if it gets too transactional, he's gonna leave.
He's incredible. Before NIL was a thing, that he wasn't paying players under the table. Come on, dude.
All people, too. It's like, dude, you were the transactional guy.
Do you think these guys are just wanting to go to Lexington, Kentucky and live there for 6 months? Like, I've been to Lexington, Kentucky. That is not an enjoyable place. It is cold constantly at that place. It is miserable at that place. They don't go there for Lexington, Kentucky. They went there because John Calipari could sell them anything they want, and he paid them.
Yeah.
I know. It is what it is.
You could sell ice to an Eskimo for sure. He's hilarious. He's one of a kind.
It's like the Nick Saban argument in football. Not to turn this to a football argument, but Nick Saban arguably got out of college football because it also became too transactional. Dude, you paid more players. Come on, dude. Don't stop. Because it's an even playing field now, it's too transactional.
Yeah, exactly.
If you were still the only one doing it, you would love it still. Don't get me with that too transactional stuff. That's a ridiculous statement for him to say. He's coping because it's an even playing field. And that statement right there might tell me all I need to know on Arkansas this year, that I don't know if he really likes his team.
Definitely. The Saban thing is hilarious because it's like all these Midwestern schools with the alumni that have deep-ass pockets can finally spend their money on players. It's like, and then that's when you're like, no, it's not the same anymore as it used to be. It's like, because you can't stack 5 5-stars at one position and then just wait for one guy to go to the NFL and then put the next guy in. Like, it's hilarious.
It's unbelievable.
Saban is miserable. He's
miserable. Don't get me started on him.
I was listening to part of my take today, and they had Russillo on, and he was talking about how, like, this idea of Nick Saban, there was about Brian Kelly being this fit at LSU. It's like, because he's not Southern, so it's like he's not a fit, and it's like Nick Saban's like from Ohio, or he's from West Virginia originally. It's like, but because he won, you know, 6 national championships or whatever, of course now he's a fit. Like, he's like the dumbest shit.
The fit. Our head football coach at Tennessee is from South Dakota. They're fit. You come here to win games. That's all that matters. I don't care about fit. If Brian Kelly was winning games, they wouldn't give a crap if he was from California, Washington. It doesn't matter where he's from. They'd love him. But he's not winning games, so LSU does not.
Brian Kelly's not a good fit because he's a massive asshole that's losing all the time. It's not that much more complicated than that. But we can get back to college basketball. That was a good little tangent there. All right, so... Yeah, Arkansas. You have Arkansas and Kentucky being a little overhyped. If we're staying on SEC, why don't you just give me the? So you have Florida first, presumably, because you said they're best in the country. Is Kentucky? Do you think Kentucky is the second best team in the SEC, or would you go another direction?
I'm gonna say Tennessee is the second best team in the SEC this year, and I'm trying to be as unbiased as possible when it comes to that, but just with the roster that they have, for the last 2 or 3 years, we've been so underhyped coming into the year that I'm done with it. I'm done with the underhyped. We've done it for the past 2 years. We're right on the cusp of it. Please, just for once, just let us get a Final Four. I won't ask for anything else. Just one. I would have Tennessee at that second tier, or the second team. And I'd probably have Kentucky right there at 3, and then I would probably go Alabama at 4. I personally love Nate Oates. I love the system he runs. His run and go, shoot the ball as fast as you can. You're not taking a mid-range. You're taking a 3 or a layup system. If I was a college basketball coach, or just a coach in general, that is exactly how I would coach my basketball team.
Yeah.
I think with, you know, future NBA star, and I'm going to hype this guy up until I can't anymore, in LeBaron Fylon. Yeah. I love him. He's going to be exceptional. I'm so excited to watch him play after just getting – and I know he played last year, but I think he's going to take a really big step this year. And then, you know, Aiden Holloway, he's, you know, should take a next step. And just with Nate Oates himself, I think Nate Oates is in Alabama right there at, you know, the 4 spot. And then after that, it gets a little tricky. I think – Arkansas probably deserves to be, you know, right there at the 4th or 5th, you know, and then Auburn right there at 6th. And then after that, it's fend for yourself. Who makes it, makes it. I think Missouri, you know, I think Dennis Gates is a really good basketball coach. I know he went 0-18 2 years ago and then turned it around and had a really, really good team last year. So I think he could, you know, Missouri could be right there. Like I said, I love Bucky Ball at Texas A&M. I hope he comes in and really shows out. and maybe decides to come to Tennessee when Rick Barnes retires. If you're listening, Bucky, I'm your guy. I think they're right there. Vanderbilt's right there. I think Vanderbilt might be a little bit underrated as well. I think Mark Byington's a really good basketball coach. I think we saw that last year, you know, as an in-state rival for Tennessee. It pains me to say, but I think Vanderbilt could be a really good basketball team this year as well. And Ole Miss is also right there. I'm a huge Chris Beard fan as a basketball coach.
Yeah. Big Chris Beard guy culture, of course.
After that, it goes downhill, though. Georgia, I'm not a Mike White guy. I wasn't a Mike White guy when he was at Florida. LSU, I don't think their basketball program's ever going to be good because I don't think they allocate enough funds to their basketball coach to be successful there. Unfortunately, because I feel like at a school like that, and you saw what Will Wade did there before he, you know, got the axe from the NCAA and has made insane runs at McNeese and now is going to be really good at NC State. They can be good in basketball, but I don't think they care enough. I think they care more about women's basketball, which is fair. They're really good in women's basketball, but I just don't see it with them. And then poor South Carolina. He needs to be finding a way to get out of there. So I think 15 and 16 is pretty locked down with LSU or South Carolina, whichever way you want to flip it there. And then Oklahoma's another one. Porter Moser, man, he's a really good basketball coach as well. And that's another one that I was hoping just stay at Loyola for a little bit longer, just stay a little bit longer. Rick Barnes is eventually gonna, you know, he's eventually gonna retire. Let's go get Porter Moser after that, but he's probably not going to leave Oklahoma. But I think he could shake it up. So I don't know from top to bottom if you'll see as strong as last year from the SEC. I don't think you'll see, 13, 14 teams in, however many it was last year. But I think your top teams are going to be top in the country. And then I think your middle-of-the-pack teams are going to be teams that can beat any team on any given night. Throughout the SEC and you know, throughout the country as well. But I think that could go for a lot of the conferences, maybe outside of Big Ten and the Big East. SEC basketball is always – there's always teams that are going to be talked about at the beginning of the year. And then how much was Florida getting talked about before the season last year? And then they go and win the national championship, so –
how much was Florida getting talked about, like, almost three-quarters of the way into the season? It was still, like...
Exactly.
Like, we don't know. Like, exactly. Auburn is Auburn, and Duke is Duke. Florida's a maybe. And it was, like, they started the season, what was it, 14-15-0?
Yeah.
And, like, they looked... Yeah. And it was just like, oh, they haven't played anybody. But, yeah, it's going to be one of those years.
When they went to Auburn last year and beat them at Auburn is when people finally were like, this is a really good basketball team. And then they run the table in the SEC championship. And then, you know, Walter Clayton does what Walter Clayton does. And that's the crazy thing about college basketball is you look at March Madness and look at the way they got to the national championship. What, three of the, like, six games they played to win it all could have went either way. I mean, it took a miraculous performance from Walter Clayton against Texas Tech last year to even make the Final Four. And then same with the Auburn game and then even the UConn game. So that's the best part about the sport is you really can't sit here and say that this team's going to win it all this year because they could have one bad night in March and all you did in the regular season is done. As a Tennessee fan, I've seen it a lot.
Yeah. No, that March Madness last year, I think casual fans gave a shit is like, no Cinderella, like so boring and so chalk. It's like, do you guys watch any of these games? It was like, Houston barely got away from Purdue in that last game where Braden Smith was perfect in the second half.
Yes.
And then they played Duke in the Final Four. Duke won the game. And Houston just grabbed this win from absolute thin air. I mean, I remember I'm a bartender. Like, I work as a bartender. Mm. And, like, I remember I was working when that happened. And I had Duke in my bracket. I was like, they're the best team in the country, as a lot of people did. And just watching that happen on, like, the TV behind the people at the bar. And I was just like, what the fuck is going on? Like, Yeah. How, what just happened? Like, how did that possibly happen? I'll never forget it. And I couldn't even enjoy it. Like, because that Duke team was too fun. So I couldn't even enjoy Duke. It wasn't even Coach K anymore. So it was like, this isn't even funny to me anymore. And I was just like, bums me out. They're like, Duke is choking, which, and then I was like embarrassed that I was, that I cared, because it's fucking Duke. Yeah. So who cares?
It really sucks to see that, because I like John Shire and I loved the Duke team last year. Cooper Flagg was just phenomenal. I mean, he's a generational talent. And I still think that arguably they had the best roster in the country. They just blew it against Houston. I think they're probably your national champions if they don't lose that game. And
I think I also they are in my bracket. I think they are, even though they lost to Houston, the most talented team. Other than maybe UConn, what would that have been? 24? Yeah.
Yeah.
UConn 2024 in Duke last year. Even though they didn't win, I don't know. To me, like, it was just the whole year was like, it's pretty obvious how fucking good this team is. It's unreal.
They dominated. They just, and granted, the ACC was not some power conference last year.
No.
But they just ran through it. I mean, I think they might have lost two or three games, whatever it was. But there wasn't many nights where you flipped on a Duke game and it was very close when it came down to 10 minutes left in the second half. It was, and I think maybe even a little bit of that, you know, late game against Houston and them kind of blowing that could have had something to do with them not playing games as tight throughout the year.
Definitely.
Maybe it didn't, but I mean, that could go a long way, and that could definitely have something to do with it. And I hated seeing Duke not win at all, because watching Florida win a national championship when you're a Tennessee basketball fan, just it hurts me. But as a basketball fan, you love seeing good teams win it all, and you love seeing good teams play in a Final Four. And this is what I'll say from a basketball, a sicko fan, is seeing 4-1 seeds play in the best event in all of sports, in my opinion, in the Final Four was phenomenal for college basketball. I know people love their Loyola Chicago's to go to the Final Four. I know they love their NC States. I get that. And that's fun as a sicko too, but to see four of they are the best team. They were the best teams last year. If you look at any analytical, you know, statistical record, whatever, that was the four best teams last year. To see them, both of those Final Four games, go down to how they did, and then you get the national championship, who, you know, was a really good game, came down to a, you know, could have been game winner from Houston. That's what you love about it. That, from the sicko standpoint, I would take that over a Loyola Chicago or NC State making it 10 out of 10 times. And that's probably another hot take that I've said tonight, but that I'll stand by that. And I loved last year's March Madness.
I completely agree. I think everyone wants a Cinderella story until they're getting beaten by 20 in the Final Four.
Yeah.
It's like, it's you never not that see fun.
You don't want to see the last few college basketball games you get to see until, you know, November to be a blowout.
Yeah.
You just don't. And we didn't get that last year. So
you want them to win a couple games they're not supposed to, get to that Sweet 16, Elite Eight, and then play Purdue tough. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and it'd be like, wow, what a story. Like, they were this close to making a Final Four. Good thing they didn't, because they would have gotten killed by Duke, right? Like,
exactly.
It's perfect. All right. Bryce, it's been great talking to you. We're probably going to hop off here in a second, but before we do, I would love to get a Final Four national championship prediction from you, if you don't mind me asking.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see here. So obviously, Florida's going to be in there. Houston's going to be in there. I'm going to go Texas Tech. I really like Texas Tech's roster this year. Let's see. Who is my fourth pick? Screw it. Tennessee. We're doing it. This is the year. Tennessee. And then Florida's going to go back-to-back. They're going to go back to the Billy Donovan age. Todd Golden is Billy Donovan recreated, and he's going to go to the NBA, and we're never going to have to hear about Todd Golden again.
He's going to go to the NBA and be incredibly mediocre for a decade.
No. Todd Golden's good for college basketball. I hope he stays as a watcher. He's good, and he's fun to watch. But I think I'm in the boat of, until you beat them, they're the best team, and it's just going to be hard for me to see Florida not doing it. I love their team. I love their front court and just the way that Florida plays and the talent he brought in with Boogie Flan. I don't care what he did last year. Arkansas fans have been in the comments saying that they were better without him, blah, 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 whatever. No. Boogie Flan's a really good basketball player. Florida's going to really benefit from Boogie Flan. And then you bring back the best backcourt or the best front court in college basketball from last year to this year's team. Yeah, Florida's the best team. I think they're going to go back-to-back, as much as it pains me to say. But that's where I see things going, and we'll see if I'm right.
I love it, Bryce. Way to take a stand. Is there anything you want to plug before we hop off here real quick?
Yeah, College Court Talk on all socials besides Twitter. On Twitter, it's College Court T. You can find me on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter as well. And I try to post daily and going to be very active throughout the college basketball season. And hoping to talk to Jacob throughout the year and pick his brain as the season goes on.
I love it. And we'll definitely have you back on. We'll have you back on once Nick is available too. And we were talking about this a little earlier in the week, but you were talking about doing some live stuff maybe throughout the season. Yeah. And that's going to be a lot of fun for you. And I'd love to hop on. I'm sure Nick will hop on from time to time. Great stuff. Really appreciate you coming on. Mid-range, all socials, Mid-range CBB. All right. Appreciate everyone listening.
Yeah.
Signing off.
See y'all.